Hey guys, welcome back. For our final lesson today, we're going to be looking at perhaps the most essential aspect of poetry in terms of its craft, and that's the line. Before we get started though, if you want to learn and know more about line and how the line itself functions, I encourage you to read Rebecca Hazelton's essay, Learning the Poetic Line, which you can find on your suggested readings list. Okay. As poets, it's really important that we understand the various ways a line can be used. A line is the basic unit of a poem. Think of a poem as a house. You have your images, your sound, your diction, as we've talked about, and you put all these things together to make little rooms, which is actually the word stanza. Instead of a paragraph, we call it stanza. It actually comes from the Italian word meaning little room. We build these little rooms and we build these little entryways and we try to construct something that can house and hold all of our ideas. The line then is the basic unit of support. It's the bricks, the pieces of wood, the beams that are in the house. And without strong lines, without those bricks and without those pieces of wood and those beams, the house, and in essence the poem, can come crumbling down. A line isn't something we often think about, and we have to start thinking about it now. The more that we read and the more we write poetry, if we understand the line and how it functions, just like we talked about with imagery, with figurative language, and with sound, we'll be better able to get our ideas across to the reader and be more successful with the work we create. So what, in the end, is a line? A line is simply a fragment of text used in poetry that allows the reader to amplify sound, images, and meaning. We say that it allows the reader to amplify those things because the writer is amplifying them. When I read a strong line break as a reader, I can start recognizing things that are being put into more importance or that have more emphasis. But that starts with the writer making those decisions. There are different types of lines we want to consider. And I'm going to go over two of them, and then again, we're going to look at some of these examples in some poems in a minute. The first type of line that we're going to notice is called the enjambed line. An enjambed line is simply a line that does not end with punctuation and can't be understood as an independent idea. Essentially, it carries over. And if you think about the importance of that as a writer, if you want your reader to stop and really think about what you just said, you might not want to use an enjambed line. If, however, you want to pull them through and entice them to keep reading, using an enjambed line will do that. So what is that other type of line called? It's actually called an end-stopped line. And an end-stopped line is a line that does end with some kind of punctuation, or the line can be understood as a complete thought. So now that we know enjambed lines, and end-stopped lines, and we know how important the line is, some of you might be asking, well, what are the rules then? How do I do this successfully? Here's the good news. There are no rules about when to break lines, but we always want to consider one really important thing. As mentioned a minute ago, the line is another way that you as the poet can direct the readers to understand a meaning or feeling. Because of this, you want to be aware of what energy you gain if you use a long, rolling, continuous line, like, say, Walt Whitman uses, if you've read any Whitman, versus using something that's more short and choppy, like Robert Creeley, who's a poet we'll look at in a minute. Now, the results of the line break are also important to think about. It's not just that it's going to give the reader a particular meaning. Dramatically so at times, it's going to help us understand you in a particular way if you break the line in certain aspects. But it's also going to change the physical reading, the actual sound of the way that I read the poem, the thing that I hear in my head as I'm reading it on the page, of how your reader engages with your work. When you get to a line break, we want to give a slight hesitation as we read. Some readers don't do this all the time, but for the purposes of this exercise, when I read these poems, I'm going to extenuate that pause, and I'm going to actually make it a little more dramatic. The thing about the line in the end is that you as a poet are not always going to be in the room with me as a reader when I'm engaging with your work. So because of that, you want to use images that help drive me one way. And you want to use figurative language that stays in my mind and unpacks the poem's meaning for me in one way. And then you want to use rhyme in ways when you want the poem to sing. And you want to use sound so I remember certain phrases. But then you also use the line breaks, because the line breaks can make me stop. Or they can make me keep going so I don't stop. And if there's no punctuation and there's no break, I'm just going with the line and it's moving so quickly. And that can show me some type of energy, anxiety, etc. But for you to be in control of how I hear your poem, for you to be in control of how I read it, you have to use the line break. So, lines will help us highlight our craft. And in the end, that's what we want. So let's look at a couple examples. The first piece we're going to look at is one of my most favorite poems. Now again, I'm going to read it. It's called The Language by Robert Creeley. And I'm going to really pause kind of dramatically at the end of each line. But I want you to take note of what's happening. Simply looking at the poem, you're going to see they're pretty short lines, most of which are only a couple words. But hear what happens as I read the piece, and then we'll have a brief discussion. The language. Locate, I love you, somewhere in teeth and eyes. Bite it, but take care not to hurt. You want so much, so little. Words say everything. I love you again. Then what is emptiness for? To fill, fill. I heard words and words full of holes, aching. Speech is a mouth. Now what's happening here? We're going to walk through it, and I want you to keep in mind the precision with which Creeley decided to break these lines. The first line is not locate I love you. The first line is locate I, which now has a double meaning. It's locate I, so it's locate the self, but it's in jammed. So now the line pulls us to the next, and it's actually locate I love you. And then look at what that next line says. Love you some. Love you a little bit. Is that what the line is actually saying? No. The line is saying, love you somewhere. Love you somewhere. Love you somewhere in. And it keeps going teeth and eyes. So every time we think we know what the phrase, the line is saying, we're pulled into the next line. And it's a new meaning that's suddenly revealed to us. Locate, I love you somewhere in teeth and eyes. Bite it, but take care not. And then look at that line, to hurt you. Later, there's another one, little words. Later, there's another one, aching speech. The more you spend time with this poem, you realize this is not just a poet who's breaking lines because he wants it to look like a poem. He's breaking the lines because he wants you as a reader to read with hesitation. Because what is the speaker trying to do? One could argue the speaker is trying to say words that are sometimes difficult. What are those words? I love you. If you've ever tried to say that to somebody and you're not sure how they're going to respond, or you're not sure how you yourself feel, it can be really terrifying. So instead of just telling us that, instead of saying I love you is really hard, he physically gives that to us by breaking it up. He can't give it to us. Locate I love you somewhere in. And then we get the double meaning. Love you some, and again later, to hurt you. Because what can love do? Once we say it, and once that person says it back, now if I do something negative, if I let them down, I can hurt them even more, and they can hurt me. Because once I've opened up my heart, now someone else can do something terrible with it. So it's a nerve-wracking thing to say. And what is love? Again, it's little words. And Creeley gets that in here. But the fact that he makes us hesitate for each line, with the enjambed line, breaking these lines in ways we wouldn't typically read, there's no other way to engage with it than to hear that stutter, that sense of hesitation, that inability to get the words out because what the speaker is trying to say is hard. Now, way back at the beginning, when we started talking about image, I said, think about a concert. Think about some place you could go to, and a place you have been, I should say, that you remember everything around you, and then you try to retell that to a speaker, and I said, or to a reader. And I said, you could probably tell me all about the concert, but wouldn't I rather have been there with you? Wouldn't I rather have heard the music myself? Line breaks are another way for you to not just tell me something, for you to allow yourself to imply a meaning by breaking the line and giving me, as a reader, a way of understanding what you're actually feeling, what you want me to feel, without ever saying it. You're showing it to me. In your poems, feel free to break lines to create that sense of hesitation, urgency, joy even. And feel free to allow the line breaks to help us gain meaning from the poem rather than the actual words you're trying to give us. The lines themselves can function in that way. Okay, let's look at another example. We were talking a minute ago about how line breaks can help a reader feel something without it ever being said. Line breaks can also help poems do some things that otherwise they either wouldn't be able to, or that without them, the poem wouldn't have the uniqueness that it has. And perhaps the best example that I can think of is a well-known poem by Gwendolyn Brooks called We Real Cool. As usual, I'm going to read the poem, and then we're going to talk about it. We Real Cool, the pool players, seven at the Golden Shovel. We real cool, we left school, we lurk late, we strike straight, we sing sin, we thin gin, we jazz June, we die soon. Curious. Now, having talked about rhyme already, you can tell that there is, at this point, internal rhyme. Cool and school, late and straight, sin and gin, June and soon. Now, it's internal because it's not the end rhyme. Gwendolyn Brooks has masked the rhyme by putting one word at the end of almost every line. And that word is we. So now the line is enjambed. Had it ended with we real cool, period, line break, that would be an end stop line. It would be rhyming, and we would not have the enjambment. But simply moving one word up to most of those, A, masks the rhyme, so the poem feels a little more fresh. But B, and perhaps more importantly, it leads us to a new understanding. What is that understanding? Let's look at it again. At the end of every line, we're getting this collective we. And what are these people doing? They're skipping school. They're playing pool. They're staying out late at night. They're drinking. But what happens at the end? They die soon. And what's a way to show that? And what's a way to make us feel it as a reader? It's to eliminate something. It's to erase one important thing. And again, simply by glancing at the poem, what does the very last line miss? It misses the word we. As soon as we die soon, now there's an emptiness. There's a physical space on the page where there's no more we. The we is gone. Because the actions that they're taking will lead to their demise. Gwendolyn Brooks could have written this poem very straightforward, as we mentioned before. But a simple change in the line breaks, in the presentation, help us hear the poem in new ways, help us see and understand the metaphor a little easier, and it brings the poem to life. These are things you can do with your line breaks. Don't just think about randomly breaking a line, and don't always follow the rhyme scheme. Find new ways to present that basic unit, because remember, if that unit is strong, the house you build will be more and more and more able to handle all the weight we're putting in it. And that's what we're doing with a poem. We're putting our emotional weight, the weight of the world sometimes, in these pieces. And if you want someone to feel it, use the line breaks to secure the ability to carry some of that weight. The very last poem I want to talk with you guys about is perhaps a piece that you've come across in school or through other poetry anthologies. And it's called The Red Wheelbarrow by William Carlos Williams. Now, right away, I'm going to point out again, this is a relatively short poem. And it's a poem that has a million different interpretations, and we're not going to get into it too much. But I've shown you how a line break can show dramatic hesitation and can help us feel something more about the narrative in the poem. And then we looked at We Real Cool, and we saw how it can also build up this metaphorical loss by changing the pattern and structure of language and breaking the line in new ways. Now I want to show you how the actual placement of lines can give us another type of meaning. So I'm going to read the poem, and then we're going to talk about it. The Red Wheelbarrow. So much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater beside the white chickens. That's it. It's the whole poem. Arguably one of the most famous and canonized poems ever written. Why? Well, on one hand, it's beautiful for something we talked about during our first lesson, and that's the image it creates. Williams was famous for pushing forward this idea of no ideas but things. We wanted to focus on the image. So what do we see here? We see the red wheelbarrow. We see the color. We know what it is. There's nothing hidden there. It's glazed with rainwater. We see the rain kind of falling, and we see the glow of it. Beside what? Chickens, not just chickens, white chickens. We can see it. If I gave you all markers, you could draw it, you could paint it with paint. They would all be different, but you get an idea of what the image is. It's a snapshot of a particular scene, right? But there's something else happening here when it comes to the poem. And we haven't talked too much about meter or about the way in which particular rhythm patterns in speech occur in a poem. But I'm going to read this to you. And I'm going to just sort of tap on the table for you to hear the way these words are actually showing up and how the line is broken. Okay? So much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rain water beside the white chickens. What does that sound like? Could argue it sounds like rain. And if you physically look at the poem, and if you actually diagram where those stresses are, it actually looks, I'm not sure if you can see this, it actually looks like rain. So Williams, for this poem, not only gave us the image, but he gave us something that some of us forget about, which is the sound. Had the poem been written as one sentence, which is all it is, so much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater beside the white chickens, we lose all of it. We lose the hesitation. You notice wheelbarrow is broken where it shouldn't be. There's that hesitation. Depends upon a red wheelbarrow, right? So we get the hesitation because of the enjambed line. But we would also lose that pitter-patter of rain. We would lose the sound that helps us think of the scene, which places us there even more. If we use the line in these ways, by trying to create a sonic element, by adding to the hesitation, the feeling that we want the reader to walk away with, by giving our reader a new way to think about the metaphors, like we did in We Real Cool, and a new way to think about what the speaker is trying to get across, like we did with the language, our poems are not only going to become stronger, they're going to become more fascinating and engaging for the readers. In the end, you guys are writing poetry because you have something to say. Otherwise, we would keep it all in our notebooks, tuck it away under our pillow at night. But you guys have something to say, and now that you have a microphone, now that you're here and you're ready to write and start sharing your work, you have to be willing to take a chance to make sure that what you say gets across to the reader in the best way possible, in the most accurate way that you as the writer want. Because remember, in the end, you're not here with me to read the poem. When I come across your poem on the message board or in a journal or in a book down the line, you're not going to be here to share it with me. So the way you present it on a page with your line breaks has got to be the thing that helps me understand how to read it and therefore what to feel when I'm done reading it. Line breaks are really, really, really fascinating and fun to play with. So for this next assignment, we want you to write a poem that arrives at its idea, its aboutness or purpose, by using lines in an interesting way. So think really, really carefully about The Language by Robert Creeley. All he's trying to do is saying I love you is hard, but he presented it in a new way. Gwendolyn Brooks tried to suggest that some of the actions that young people take are dangerous. How did she present it? She presented it by breaking lines in a new way. William Carlos Williams wanted to show the beauty of a scene, but by breaking the lines in a new way, he not only helped us see it, but he helped us hear it. And by hearing it, we can place ourselves better in the scene. Line breaks, like I said, are really fun to play with, but don't be afraid of trying something new. Spread the poem out, break the poem in weird ways, and push yourselves to create work that allows the reader to get the feeling you want them to have. Because in the end, that's what you're in control of. See you guys later.